Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Bills on the Border podcast. I'm Tom Randolph. With me again is Tommy Watson. Tommy, how are you?
I'm doing good.
And again, Brody Johnson. How are you, Brody?
Oh, doing great. Doing great.
Yeah, we're all doing pretty fine. We just got done having a pretty good dinner. We made some buffalo chicken, some pineapple, some toast, some salad. Overall, good dinner. Coming off a pretty solid weekend, and we delayed the podcast for a day because there was some big stuff to talk about. That happened yesterday in the world of sports on Monday, April 6th. So we'll get into that. For starters, pretty great national championship bout last night between the Duke Blue Devils and the Wisconsin Badgers. Tommy, what did you think of the outcome?
You know, I thought the Badgers followed the blueprint that they used to beat Kentucky in the semifinal. And it almost worked against the Blue Devils, but when they reached that, probably the 9-point lead with about 12 minutes left to go maybe in the second half, that's when Duke kind of kicked it back into gear and was able to cut the lead down.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really impressive performance kind of all around by Kaminsky, who played great against Okafor and managed to keep Okafor off the floor for most of the game. Okafor only played 22 minutes total, had 10 points, 3 rebounds, all of which were offensive rebounds. And then on top of that, Kaminsky added 21 points and 12 rebounds himself, and he played really excellent defense as a rim protector, staying down, keeping Okafor from being able to turn over that shoulder and bully him into the paint.
Yeah, you know, I think he really did play like the player of the year because he saw his weakness. People knew his weakness was his defense, and he managed to step that up big time in the
game. You know, Nigel Hayes played a really solid game for Wisconsin. He was 5 of 10 from the floor. He started to hit early. He was 3 of 4 from three-point range, had ended up with 13 points. Didn't really affect the game outside of his scoring, but, you know, I think Nigel Hayes showed that Bo Ryan's got another guy coming back next year that got a lot of talent. And then Sam Decker had a really good first half. He didn't really shoot the ball very well. He was 0 of 6 from 3 for the game. But he ended up with 12 points, 8 rebounds, and he was getting tip-ins, and he was kind of being really active on the floor, controlling the pace of the game really well. But then, all of a sudden in the second half, it seemed like a spark was lit, and that spark was lit by Grayson Allen, the freshman, who ended up playing he played 21 minutes, but he ended up scoring 16 points. Most of them were in that stretch where he scored 10 straight points for the Blue Devils. And he was just like a wrecking ball getting into the paint. Brody and I were watching the game together at my parents' house, and we were just like, what? He's just taking over. Oh, yeah. He was making acrobatic plays. He was chasing down loose balls. He was getting pumped up. I mean, he was finishing at the rim. I was really impressed, Brody. What did you think of Grayson Allen's play?
I mean, his hustle of realizing that Okafor was on the bench and someone needed to keep the Devils in the game because otherwise Wisconsin was just going to slowly build on that 9-point lead.
Yeah. And Okafor and Winslow were both on the bench for a long time. Winslow didn't play, as well as we thought. He played really hard, which you can expect from Justice Winslow, but wasn't really effective scoring-wise until it seemed like the referees kind of just let them play the most physical brand of offensive basketball I had seen. The biggest knock I have, and there were some controversial plays, but the refs just let Grayson Allen and Justice Winslow bully their way into the paint every time, where it seemed like a lot of times they were committing offensive fouls. I mean, they were just charging into that lane. And then the worst call, I think, of the game, I don't want to dwell too much because it was a fantastic game. The officiating has been poor. I don't think the officials are poor. I think the way the game is allowed to be officiated is poor. Because these guys were just – the game was overly physical. There wasn't a lot of fluidity. There wasn't a lot of, you know, ball movement. They were just guys bashing into the paint. Then there was that controversial call late. The ball – there was a kind of a tussle for the ball down low. The ball clearly – I mean clearly, broad as day, goes off of Winslow's finger. And they give the ball to Duke after reviewing the play in some replay. I would understand if it wasn't under 2 minutes – and it was, it was in the bang. It was a bang bang play, and they can't tell because they can only review that under 2 minutes. But there was 1:51 left on the clock. They reviewed it. You clearly see Winslow's finger tip back as the ball hits off of it. Then they send the ball Duke's direction.
I heard that there was a story that came out that the referees didn't have the right angle or something. But that
how can they not have
exactly?
The right angle?
Yeah, that's unacceptable. They should have every angle possible. They should have access to every single camera feed.
They should have more angles than a viewer.
Yeah, they should have an angle at the top of the backboard. They should have more angles than we're capable of seeing, and they should be able to deliberate long enough to see, well, Winslow clearly touched mm-hmm. that ball. I mean, that Luck look from across the baseline that was looking straight at it. I mean, you see his finger bend back. And then Tyus Jones flexed his nuts. He showed he had onions, and he sealed the game with a big three on the subsequent possession mm-hmm. to put the Blue Devils up 8. And Wisconsin made a run in the last minute and a half. But, you know, you give a team an opportunity to put it to, you know, to put a team away or put even more points on the board and bury a team like Wisconsin, it's got to be kind of demoralizing. You go from thinking the ball should be your possession to coming back down to the floor to play defense where you're hoping for a stop, and then Tyus Jones flexes nuts and drains a three. Three of his 19 points in the second half, 23 total points, which is fourth most ever by a freshman in the national championship game. And the Duke freshman scored 60 points, which is the most ever by a group of freshmen in a title game. I think Duke showed in the final 12 minutes of the game that they had the more talented team. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted Wisconsin to win.
I think a lot of people wanted Wisconsin to win. I know I did.
Yeah. So Bo Ryan made some controversial comments after the game. He made some comments about Rent a Player, which I think were kind of misconstrued. So just to give you guys a chance to hear those actual comments in their full context, you can listen to them here.
Karen Krause, New York Times. Bo, Frank said it's just going to be hard to say goodbye. Can you talk about, is it going to be hard for you to say goodbye to this class of seniors?
Oh, without a doubt. All the seniors that I've had the hard to say the word, but every player that's played through the program, okay? We don't do a rent a player, you know what I mean? Try to take a fifth year guy or whatever, and that's okay. If other people do that, that's great. I like trying to build from within. It's just the way I am. And to see these guys grow over the years and to be here last year and lose a tough game, and boom, they came back. They said what they wanted to do, and they put themselves into that position. And they won't forget this for a long time. You know, it's went on, but I told them that's life. Where do you get a job? Where do you start the next 60 or 70 years of your life? It's not always going to work out the way that you would like it to, but then you measure a person by what it takes to discourage them.
So that clip, I think, showed you a little bit different, different narrative than you were originally hearing kind of on the airwaves today. Everyone kind of got in a big stir about the fact that he said, we don't do rent a player, which I think a lot of people took as, we don't do one and dones. We don't do guys that are only going to be with the program for a year or two. I think everyone misconstrued his words. I think what Bo Ryan was trying to say there is, you know, we try and go out and we build a program with the guys that we have. We don't try and go out and get somebody who's a fifth JUCO year or a JUCO. We try and build the program from within, which is admirable. I don't think he was trying to knock on any of his colleagues like Mike Krzyzewski and John Calipari and, you know, even Bill Self, who's been recruiting a lot of one and dones recently. I don't think it was a knock on them. I think, you know, Bo Ryan's the type of coach that if his player plays well enough that he's projected to go in the top end of the draft after a year of just playing for him, he'd be okay with them leaving. I think people misconstrued Bo Ryan's words to grab a headline. And that's why I wanted to address it tonight, because I think people misunderstood what he was saying. And I think when you listen to it in the context of the question, in the context of his full answer, you realize that he wasn't knocking Krzyzewski. No. I think he wasn't knocking Kyle Parr. He wasn't knocking these programs that do one-and-dones, because I'm sure he would welcome that one-and-done type of talent. But I think, again, his words were misconstrued, and I just wanted to address that because I think most of the country still thinks that Bo Ryan knocked, you know, was trying to knock on these other coaches. And you look at Bo Ryan, and he's kind of got this menacing kind of look to him. He doesn't look like the, you know, he might look like he's kind of a grizzled old man who's
looks
kind
like
of
the Grinch.
Yeah, who's grumpy and everything. But you listen to him talk about his players. You look at the way that his players defend him and play for him and really love playing for Coach Ryan. You know, I think that just because of his outward appearance and the way he sometimes comes off as a coach, I think his words were misconstrued. And I think that if you look at the full context of the quote, you'll see that the headline that was all over today about rent a player wasn't really a headline at all. It was just a coach being honest about the fact that he's going to really miss the players that he has. I mean, he coaches a guy like Frank Kaminsky for 4 years. You're going to miss that guy when he leaves. You're going to miss not only what he brings to the team as a from a talent aspect, you're going to miss what he brings to the team from a leadership standpoint and being an ambassador for your university. So I think that's all that Bo Ryan was trying to get at there. Now, he did criticize the officiating. And I think he had a point to.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at the fouls and the free throws in the second half, I think there were some blatant missed calls. And if you look at the distribution, Wisconsin only took 3 free throws in the second half, whereas Duke took 16. That shouldn't happen. And there was you could say, oh, maybe Duke was playing a more physical brand of basketball, they were getting to the rim.
But I don't think it was both sides of the ball.
Yeah, both teams were trying to get to the basket, trying to score at the rim. So, you know, I think he had a point with saying there were some missed calls. Tommy, what did you think?
Well, as much as I like Bo Ryan, I personally just don't believe in ever criticizing the refs. Not because you actually have criticism with them, but publicly. Because it never comes off as good. It never sounds good when you listen back to it. Sometimes it just comes off as catty.
I don't think he cares about the way he comes off to the media. I think that he has a responsibility as a coach to those players to say, look, my team, the guys that go out there and bust their hump for 40 minutes, kind of got hosed a little bit with those calls. And if I had a coach that went out to the media and said, yeah, you know what, my guys played hard and I feel like they were a little bit robbed, I would have more respect for my coach for coming in my defense. Because the last thing you want to hear is a coach say, well, they made the calls they did, you know, the guys could have played better and gotten past those. I mean, I think that he was just trying to defend the fact that
he was frustrated.
They didn't get a fair shake, and he was frustrated. It was the heat of the moment. You just lost the national championship. You're going to be critical of there and some things that you didn't. You think things you thought should have gone your way. And, I mean, look, the whole country thinks that call should have gone differently. If you looked at the ESPN poll, 88% of the country thought it should go to
well, the commentators, while it was live, were making the call. It's obviously Wisconsin ball.
Right.
They were shocked when it wasn't.
And if you look at it, the rest of the country, almost every single state was 90%. The only state that wasn't was there was 25% of the people in North Carolina thought that the ball should have been Duke's, but obviously that's clear. And then you look at Wisconsin, 98% of the state thought it should be Wisconsin's ball. But, you know, I think in all fairness, we should probably talk about the job that Coach K did with this team this year.
Yep.
He took a heavily loaded team of freshmen, and he won his 5th national championship, which is now 2nd all-time to John Wooden, and he passes Adolph Rupp, last night. He's been to 12 Final Fours. He has the most victories of all time. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that he's probably the greatest college basketball coach of all time. Maybe one of the greatest coaches in any sport. He's won gold medals. I would go out and say today, in terms of the way basketball has been modernized, he's the best basketball coach in college basketball history over John Wooden. Tommy, what is your opinion there?
You know, I kind of agree with that because a lot of people will make the John Wooden 10 national championships argument, which fairly valid argument.
Yeah.
But basketball is different from what it was. There's more competition. The smaller schools are better than they were. And there's just overall more talent spread across the whole college basketball scene.
Yeah.
Which makes it more difficult to do what Mike Krzyzewski's done in his tenure at Duke.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that his players, and I think this is true of a lot of coaches, but his players more than anything go to battle for him. And I think they have a special relationship with Coach Krzyzewski where he becomes like a family member to them. And they view him very much as a father figure. And I mean, there have been some guys that have gone through that program that lost their dads early. And I'll note that Quinn Cook actually, senior guard for Duke, lost his dad when he was in high school. And he fostered a very close relationship with Nolan Smith, who you guys know played at Duke a while back. He also lost his father when he was young. And I think that Krzyzewski kind of serves as that role model that can come in and be that father figure for these guys that either didn't have one or lost one or just need that paternal guidance in their life. And I think that Krzyzewski's done a really great job with turning a school that's known for its academics and its the quality of its education into a basketball powerhouse. I think that's something to be admired. Brody, what are your thoughts? Greatest coach of all time?
I would say so. Just for his tenure of 3 decades now of at least making it to a national championship and winning 5 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no really other words to say impressive.
Yeah. And you know, you can look at the players that we hated that played for Duke growing up. I know I definitely hated J.J. Redick as a kid. I hated Greg Paulus. My dad still will not, drop every time he mentions Duke how much he hates Christian Laettner and Danny Ferry and all these guys. But at the end of the day, they're stand-up fast. They're stand-up basketball players and they're stand-up guys. And I think he really breeds. He takes kids who are coming out of high school and he turns them into young men, which I think is something that's really admirable about what he's done at Duke. So enough kissing the ass of Coach K here. I got a chance to see him speak at Duke this winter, and I got a chance to see Duke play. And you know, you could tell them then that they were built to win a national championship. It was just a matter of all the chips falling in the right places for them. So exciting national championship. I think a great tournament overall. I mean, between the games, you look back all the way to the Georgia State game versus Baylor, all the way to the national championship, and you got to count that Final Four game between Wisconsin and Kentucky as amongst one of the greatest games, you know, in Final Four history. Just overall, great tournament. I mean, I think this is one of the most fun tournaments just to watch in a while, and I know we probably said every single year, but this one did not disappoint by any means.
No, it didn't. I think there were plenty of great games out in the whole tournament.
Yeah. So we'll stay on college basketball just real quick. Some news that came out today. Kansas forward, freshman forward, Cliff Alexander, who missed almost all of the second half of the season to NCAA eligibility questions, is not returning to Lawrence next season. He is going to forego his last 3 years of eligibility to go play in the NBA. Tommy, can you say you're surprised by that decision at all?
No.
No. And I, you know what? I'm not really too disappointed either. You know, Cliff Alexander could have been a nice piece for the Jayhawks moving forward, but I think mutually benefits both sides from the part ways. I don't think Bill Self wants any eyebrows raised about the quality of his program and the guys that he brings in. And I think Cliff Alexander is ready to leave the mess of his NCAA eligibility behind and go make some money. So I think it benefits both sides there. So that's enough about college basketball. Moving on into the big Kansas City news from this week. Baseball's back.
Royals!
Baseball is back. The Royals' home opener was yesterday. Game got started right around 3:30 yesterday afternoon. Not the best weather for baseball, but certainly the atmosphere looked fantastic there at the K yesterday. And we started off the season pretty well, I would say. With a 10-1 victory over the White Sox, Yordano Ventura gets the W over Jeff Samardzija. But it was not a day without a few scares.
No, it wasn't.
Tommy, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so the first scare for all of us was the injury to Ventura that we thought was unfolding in front of us.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting because it was the seventh inning, and, you know, the Royals formula typically is pull the starter after six, seventh, eighth, and ninth is Herrera, Davis, and Holland. Mm-hmm. But Ventura hadn't thrown very many pitches, and I don't blame them for leaving him in there.
He was dealing at that point.
Yeah, he was going pretty smooth, hadn't run into a whole lot of trouble. So he's out on the mound, throws a pitch, and, you know, in a blink of an eye, it looks like he's hurt. He throws his glove off, he's rolling around on the ground.
He's holding
collective
gasp
by the stadium, and we're all freaking out.
Yeah, it was weird because the ball comes out, he releases, he finishes his follow-through, he comes back, he brings his hand up, and you almost see him like twinge, and then it's like he got shot.
Yeah.
And he goes down on the ground, he throws his glove off. Brody and I were like, we were like, what happened? We were watching the game here in the living room, and we look away for a second, and then we know he's on the ground. And I think that Hudler didn't know what happened either, because I think, you know, he's off in his own little world while the game's going on. But he wasn't sure what had happened, and we all like, you know, I hope he's okay. And then, you know, Ryan Lefevre pointed out that some guys on the field were kind of laughing and joking around, and I think they realized the lack of severity of the injury, realized that it probably wasn't anything serious and that it was most likely a cramp, which, thank the gods, the baseball gods, that's all it was. It was a thumb cramp, and I believe he's reported to be healthy enough for his next start.
Yep, he will make his next start, and I think we dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
When that happened, I was definitely thinking of Booby Miles from the movie Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. And, you know, as fans and listeners may know, we just signed Ventura to a 5-year, $23 million deal with a 2-year club option, after that. So, you know, you invest that kind of money, you don't want to see his entire first season under that contract go down in flames. So I was happy to see he got up. And then in the next subsequent half inning, another scare, Lorenzo Cain trying to beat out a ball at first base. He lunges and leaps forward, which we've seen him do countless times, and his ankle kind of turns on the side of the bag, and he stumbles and trips and falls, And he rolls, and he kind of comes, pops back up. But I think for a second there, we were all kind of holding our breath, worried about Zoe for a little bit. Tommy, were you worried at all?
Well, when you first saw him slip, I was worried. But the way he was trying to catch himself and hold himself without... Because I don't think he ever actually fell on the ground. He was trying to show everyone, hey, I'm fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
and well, he played it off with a smile.
Yeah. He did trying. Fall. I mean, he slid on his ass kind of across the dirt and then rolled. So he did actually fall, but...
Well, then he did try and get up as fast as possible.
He did get up really quickly, not to worry the fans, which I really appreciated. And there was a tweet, actually, from Sam Mellinger yesterday about how this is not the first time the training staff and the coaching staff has told him, look, don't lunge for the ball. And, Brody, you can explain why that's really dangerous.
Well, you see the replay, and he almost just breaks his ankle sliding off the base.
Yeah.
And not only would it mess up your ankle, you could tear an ACL or ligament. And he has had leg injuries in the past.
Yeah.
So it's... Whenever he goes down, he is one of the quintessential parts of our defense.
Yeah.
And if he can't run the center field and hit and be a day-to-day player, it'd be a huge scare for the Royals going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're kind of our resident medical expert knee injuries. But the way you kind of explained it is that your knee can get jarred on that that base where it can either jar and tear or it can hyperextend and strain ligaments. So, you know, we're definitely glad that Lorenzo Cain is okay. And hopefully this is a wake-up call so he doesn't keep on kind of risking life and limb while lunging out for a single. I appreciate the hustle, but, you know, I'd like to see him take it a little bit safer. And I think the shot of the night, you know, there were some great pictures of, you know, Rios getting the water poured on him and jacking that home run, and there were some great pictures of, you know, the guys, Moose's intensity after that home run, which, by the way, was Mike Moustakas' first home run to the opposite field in his entire career, which I think is pretty impressive. But I think the favorite shot of the day was the one of Jared Dyson with a swarm of reporters around him wearing sunglasses, and he didn't even play yesterday. It was post-game, and he didn't even play, which I think is classic Dyson. And I think, you know, as he would say, that's what speed do. It gets you interviews, gets you publicity. But we kind of talked about this season after the performance yesterday, and it's too soon to say after one game, but we're hoping that this season is about us showing what power do. Because the Royals definitely flexed some power yesterday between the home runs of Moustakas and Rios. So I'm excited. Tommy, what's your outlook now moving forward to the next 161 games?
Well, I think it's fantastic that we had two home runs on opening day. First time since, I think, 2004, whereas last year it took us, I want to say, like a week to get a home run.
Yeah. So we had two home runs in that game, and I'm trying to remember. It was Mendy, and I can't remember his last name, something or other. And then Carlos Beltran had the walk-off at the end of the game. So that was pretty cool moment. That was following that 2003 season where we won 80-some games and finished third.
It was also encouraging to see Rios hit a home run and equal Aoki's home run total from last year.
Exactly.
I got high hopes for that position.
Yeah, I think there's nowhere to go from up, and I definitely think Rios is an upgrade defensively over Aoki, hopelessly kind of just guessing where the ball is going to be and then throwing the glove out there, and it – always miraculous.
I love Aoki, but he scared the hell out of me.
The amount of highlight plays that he had last year, and it would just look like the man has no idea where the ball is.
No.
He'd come up with it.
Yeah.
I think he actually got a few top baseball plays just because he lost track of the ball and then made a good play to catch it.
Yeah, I think it was more of just a lucky play a lot of the time than a great play. So there's a game tomorrow. Our next game against the White Sox, Danny Duffy's starting. And Duffy kind of talked today about he realizes how important these early games are to build momentum. I think that says a lot about the maturity of this team moving forward. I think they realize, you know, how important this is. You know, we talk about Duffy. He changed his diet and his exercise routine to try and get healthier because he was having such frequent injuries. So I think it shows a lot that these guys are starting to realize what it takes outside of just talent to put together a winning ball club. It takes discipline and nutrition and good workout regimens, and also that understanding and wherewithal of where you're at in the season and what's important. And I think they realize that getting off to a solid start and showing that 2014 was not a fluke. I think that's going to be really crucial. And showing that 2013 wasn't a fluke either, because if you remember, we won 80-plus games in 2013 as well. So we're carrying a string of success, which I think is important to start repeating early on in the season. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, what you were saying earlier about Duffy's mindset about the better conditioning and better nutrition and stuff like that, you know, I think the player on the Royals before Duffy, who's improved himself, that showed that the most was Gordon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's something you can't just tell someone to do. I think it's something you got to realize. And so I think Duffy is the next player to have realized that. And hopefully it spreads to some of these other players and they can all improve through that system.
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to talk about Ryan Madsen, who got involved in the relief effort yesterday, mm-hmm. closed out the ninth inning. The bullpen did not surrender any runs. Herrera and Davis looked, you know, like Herrera and Davis.
Yep.
But Ryan Madsen got in. If you guys remember, Ryan Madsen was the reliever for the Phillies in 2011 when they won that World Series. He had some issues with Tommy John. He had some contractual mishaps where he couldn't reach an agreement with the Phillies. He turned down a pretty large contract to sign with another ball club. There were some issues with Tommy John surgery. You know, 90% of the time at Tommy John surgery, you come back and you're fully healthy or even better than you were before. It didn't happen for Ryan Madsen. So he's kind of been struggling to get back out there and really, you know, perform at the major league level. Well, he did that yesterday. Shut out one inning of baseball. Looked really solid for the Royals. And I think outside of everything that's going on with the team right now, it's a really good feel-good story just in terms of being a baseball fan. Mm-hmm. It's good news to hear that a guy who hasn't played baseball in three seasons is back and pitching at a pretty high level. So I'm excited to have Ryan Madsen on the ball club. I'm even more excited after his performance yesterday. Brody, what are your thoughts on Ryan Madsen and his coming back to baseball?
I mean, it was great to see that I think he got into a little bit of trouble, but was able to compose himself, finish the game. And, I mean, I think he had a blast just being out there, being back in the major league atmosphere, especially being cheered on by the Royals.
Yeah, I think he's gonna like Kansas City, or at least I hope he does.
Yeah,
and I think we'll be big fans of him as long as he continues to deliver yep. shutout baseball and close out these games for us. So switching gears, I just wanted to talk about the Chiefs outlook a little bit. There's some stuff, you know, coming up. The draft is at the end of April, so we got a couple weeks, and we'll get more into that. But I do want to address the Chiefs now have the least cap space in football. The Saints cleared enough room to get off the off the number one spot. Now that's held by the Chiefs. And I just, you know, I'm trying to think about how it weighs benefits our team, and it doesn't benefit us anyways because it gives us no flexibility. And I was kind of looking at the salary structure and where we can save money. And Brody, as you being a fan of Mizzou, mm-hmm. I hate to tell you this, but we can save $3.5 million off the cap by cutting ties with backup quarterback Chase Daniel, who is a Mizzou alum.
Yeah, he's right now a financially incentive to release him or get some value out of him, maybe to a young team with a new quarterback like Jacksonville or Tampa Bay. The Chiefs do need to do something because they have five quarterbacks, all with collegiate experience, who have shown some success on the field.
Yeah, we've got Aaron Murray. We've got Tyler Bray, and then we've also got from the Ohio State Buckeyes, Terrell Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of pedigree, a lot of potential with those guys, and you can't have five quarterbacks
exactly.
in the roster. It's just not a smart move. So I think the Chiefs are kind of waiting to see what they can do with his salary. But you know, with the amount of draft picks we have, which is 10 this year,
yeah.
We have 2 third-round picks, 2 fifth-round picks, and 2 sixth-rounders. On top of every other round, we have a pick. You really need like $5 to $6 million of cap room to be able to realistically sign all those guys. And you know, you can wait until closer to training camp to start those guys. But you know, you'd like that flexibility so you can address some needs still in free agency. There are still decent linemen, decent number two wide receivers. Michael Crabtree, Greg Jennings, for instance, are still on the market. Another linebacker to shore up that linebacking core. The draft, as we said, is in less than a month. We got to start figuring this stuff out soon. You know, so I've been reading a lot of mock drafts about who the Chiefs should draft. Trez Paylor today said that they should draft a lineman in the first round. We've talked about this. I used to tend to agree with him on that point, but I think more and more about it. If the Chiefs aren't able to sign a number two wide receiver, which is still a glaring need for this team, I think they should draft a wide receiver with number 18 pick. Tommy, I know you disagree with me on this. I know you still think we should draft an offensive lineman. But I think if somebody like Dorial Green-Beckham is there, if Jalen Strong is there, if Devontae Parker from Louisville is there, he might not be. But I think if those guys are there, the Chiefs should take them.
Well, that's I did think they should draft an offensive lineman, but since they've made those free agent signings, I think the Chiefs are now free to draft best available between wide receiver and offensive lineman.
Okay.
So if a DGB that is there, I definitely want a DGB.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, I think it goes without saying, if a guy like Kevin White out of West Virginia or Amari Cooper out of Alabama is there at number 18, they won't
be. God, I wish.
But that would be nice to have, too. I think the question now becomes, for John Dorsey and Andy Reid, do we move up in this draft? Or do we move down in this draft? Because if you're going to take an offensive lineman with the number 18 pick, it almost makes more sense to move down a little bit because they're still going to be valuable linemen at the end of the first round. If you want to get one of those high-profile marquee receivers earlier in the draft, like say maybe at pick 12, pick 15, you know, three picks in the draft makes a lot of difference in terms of the quality of talent, especially if there's Kevin White on the board available at number 12. I think you move up. And I think, like Brody had mentioned, trading for that draft pick. Yeah,
the Chiefs do have pieces that they can get rid of to free up the cap space. Hopefully the teams that are higher up on the board.
Yeah. I mean, I think I wouldn't give anything better than a fourth-round pick for a guy like Chase Daniel, mm-hmm. but I think that's still value that you could package with maybe a third-rounder and a fourth-rounder for and your first-round pick to move up a few spots in that first round.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'll talk about the draft more as we get closer. We'll do our own mock draft, which we'll post to the website, and we'll all kind of go through and make our picks for those. But now moving over to soccer.
Yeah.
Time for Brody's Sporting KC summary of the week.
Yeah.
They played an exciting game against the Philadelphia Union on Sunday,
right? That they did, yeah. Really to start the week off in sports before the opening day baseball for the Royals and the National Championship, Sporting KC had a stoppage time thriller against Philadelphia Union. Sporting KC ended up winning 3-2, but were down 2-1 at the beginning of stoppage time. Now, there were 6 minutes of stoppage time, and Sporting KC scored with a corner kick and a set piece. So, ended up being a great game at Sporting Park, and actually was only the seventh time in MLS history that a team has been down at stoppage time and come back to win.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't watch the game, but my cousin told me about it, and he was very excited. It sounds like, once again, Sporting KC is one of the best places to see a professional sporting event in Kansas City.
Yeah, it really is. I heard recently that K-State's actually having their spring game there.
That'll be exciting. You know, I might have to go to that. If it's actually going to be at Sporting Park, I'm not a Wildcat fan, but I think that'd be pretty cool to see. Tommy, what about you? Do you think you'd go to see Wildcat spring game over at Sporting Park?
Yeah, you know, I think it'd be fun to go watch them play football in there Saturday afternoon. Good time.
Now, speaking of spring games, are you planning on going to the Nebraska spring game?
I am planning on going to the Nebraska spring game this Saturday.
All right. What are you looking for from the Huskers this season?
It'll be interesting to see. The offense is probably going to be changed again, unfortunately, because Mike Riley runs a more pro-style offense, which Husker fans have never been a big fan of, dating back to Bill Callahan, but I think he knows how to run it, and it'll be interesting because their game might be sold out.
Yeah, I think it is. So.
Typically, they're one of the highest attendance.
Yeah.
Normally, like 60,000, but it's a 95,000 seat stadium, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think the highest one in the country right now is still Alabama spring game, mm-hmm. A-Day, which I think just to Tuscaloosa draws like hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, they sell out pretty much every year.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for the sports talk today on the show. But we do want to kind of do a segment. We're going to talk about what we're watching right now. And after the show, we're going to go watch some Netflix. And our new favorite show, I think it's safe to say, is Bloodlines. For those of you that have not that are not Netflix subscribers or have not been paying attention to what's on demand on Netflix lately, this is a show called Bloodlines, and it's got it's got Kyle Chandler, and it's got Linda, what's her last name, Tommy?
Cardellini,
and some other people that you'd recognize, but I'm not quite sure what their names are. There's that guy that plays one of the villains in The Dark Knight, who plays the guy that I'm pretty sure Bane smashes his face in. They don't actually show it, but he's the guy who talks about his stock market scheme didn't work.
Yeah, I think his name was John Daggett in The Dark Knight Rises.
And then Bane goes, "You think this gives you over me?" That's one of the most terrifying lines from Bane in that movie. But so then back to the show though. It's really awesome. It's this kind of intertwined story about a family with a lot of flashbacks and there's obviously a lot of
drama.
Yeah, because it is a drama. There's a lot of secrets that this family has. There's a lot of internal dysfunction. Kyle Chandler kind of seems to be the guy that's kind of holding the family all together. And they've got a secret that they share as siblings. And it's really interesting. I'm not going to give too much away because I think that would ruin the show. But I think it's kind of a very much along the lines of True Detective in terms of its tone and the way they do flashbacks and they cover kind of a storyline of people's past and everything. It's a dark show, but a very entertaining show nonetheless. Tommy, what have your thoughts been so far on Bloodlines?
Well, you know, I think I was pleasantly surprised because I watched the preview for it maybe 2 weeks ago, and I didn't think it looked that interesting. But you guys suggested we watch it, and I watched the first episode, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought it kept you were kind of – didn't know what to expect, but you were entranced with it. And then, you know, they kind of drop a bombshell on you at the end, which – pretty much draws you in for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you want to see how it ends. So that's what we're watching right now. And I think it also deserves mentioning is that the fifth season of Louis started recently. Louis is the show by comedian Louis C.K. On FX. And for those of you that are not familiar with the show or have not watched it so far, get on Netflix and watch it. It's one of the most honest, well-put-together comedies out there. It's very much a dramedy, but it follows the kind of the ups and downs and the pitfalls of being a comedian. And this fifth season got off to a start. I had to finish the fourth season before I started the fifth, but again, Louis C.K. delivers, and he writes, directs, and edits his own show. Wow. So he basically does the job of, like, you know, 20 different people and puts out an excellent product every single year. So if you guys aren't out there watching Bloodlines or Louis, definitely take some time to watch those two shows. But this upcoming Sunday, April 12th, is a big night for television. We'll all be sitting in front of TV because Silicon Valley is back, the hit comedy on HBO, for the second season, and
more importantly,
Game of Thrones is back, season 5.
What?
After season 4, which was one of the best seasons of Game of Thrones so far. I think everything that happened in season 4 topped what happened in season 3 with the Red Wedding and everything because there's so much intrigue, so much drama. People died. More people died in season 4 than ever died in Game of Thrones before. And we're excited for season 5 to start. Spoiler alert, we will talk about what happened in the fourth season right now. So if you are not familiar, turn off the show right now because we're going to talk about it. But the show, season 4, gets off to a bang because in the second episode of season 4, King Joffrey dies because he eats some poison pie. So Tyrion goes to jail because they're blaming him and Sansa, who's new wife, for the death of Joffrey. And so, Oberyn Martell agrees to be Tyrion's champion. We're just going to kind of give you an overview of, like, the best parts of the show. We're not going to go into everything that's going on because, honestly, the parts with Bran got really, really boring last year. But, so, Oberyn becomes his champion, and then the Mountain, Gregor Clegane, smashes in Oberyn's skull with his hands in the fight, which Oberyn had pretty much had in hand. So Tyrion, seeing as this not being his way to escape, gets let out by Varys, the eunuch, and is going to go escape to Essos with Varys. But before he leaves Westeros, before he leaves King's Landing, he kills his mistress, Shay, in the bedroom with the necklace and his own hands and chokes her to death. But he's not done.
Got to top that off.
He's got to top that all off. He just killed basically his lover, his sun and his moon, and then he goes into the shitter, finds his dad sitting on the john, takes a crossbow, and kills him. His own dad. So Tyrion leaves and goes to Essos. And at the same time, Arya is going to Braavos. And at the same time, Jon Snow just watched Ygritte die, and he's fighting for the wall as the White Walkers are coming and winter is coming. And this is all coming to a head to start season 5. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be really cool. And I got real jazzed up for today because there was a great sketch that Seth Meyers did today.
I saw that.
Where Seth Meyers brings Jon Snow to a dinner party. It was hilarious. It got me even more pumped for this season of Game of Thrones. So if you haven't seen that sketch, go and watch it. And if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, go and watch all the episodes in the next 4 days before the season 5 premiere comes, because you will not be disappointed, because this season is going to be awesome. I've read the books. Brody's read the books, so we know what's going to happen, and we're so ready to see it come out on screen. Season 5 is going to be exciting, and I don't think it's going to disappoint anybody. Tommy, what are your thoughts on Game of Thrones? Are you ready for this?
I'm so ready for this.
Now, if you had to pick one character to die in this next season, who would that character be?
Cersei. I basically wanted her to die since the middle of the first season.
Yeah, I think
I've been disappointed so far.
You know, Cersei, besides Joffrey, is my least favorite Lannister. I like Tywin, all right. I really like Jaime, actually.
Oh, well, yeah.
But I think you develop more of a liking for him. The character I think I want to see die this season would definitely have to be Littlefinger. I think that relationship between him and Sansa is a little twisted, and they once said the most powerful men in all of Westeros were Varys and Littlefinger. So I'd like to see him die, because it's going to be interesting to see how it happens. Brody, how about you?
I actually want to see Mance Rayder die.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Mance Rayder die either. He's the
Terror of the Wall. Yeah, and
he's the leader of the Wildlings. So it's going to be an interesting season. It's going to be interesting. But that'll be the end of the show for this week. We went a little bit longer this time. I think we kind of agreed as a group, we're not going to limit ourselves to 30 minutes every single week. We're going to try and just give you guys as much insight and much information about what went on the week before and what's going on the week after. So we're going to exit the show a little differently tonight. We want to leave you guys with a hot new track, if you will. But it's a song that we've really... we're going to leave you guys with a song every single week that we've been listening to a lot, one that we really like, and hopefully we get our listeners to like as well. So this week, we're going to leave you guys with Matoma's remix of Biggie Smalls, Ja Rule, and Ralph Tresvant. Old Thing Back, remixed by Matoma. So for Tommy Watson and Brody Johnson, have a fun, safe week, and have a relaxing and equally fun weekend. We'll be back next week. See you guys later. I'm similar to the Thriller in Manila. Honeys call me bigger, the condom filler. Whether it's stiff tongue or stiff dick, Biggie squeeze it to make shit fit. Now check this shit, I got the pack of Rough Riders in the back of the Pathfinder. You know the epilogue by James Todd Smith. I get swift with the lyrical gift. Hit you with the dick, make your kidney shift. Here we go, but I'm not domino. I got the funk flow to make your drawers drop slow. So recognize the dick size in these Calcani jeans. I wear 13s, know what I mean? I fuck around and hit you with the Hennessy dick. Mess around and go blind, don't get to see shit. The next batter, here to shatter your blatter, it doesn't matter. Skinny or fat or light skin, the black baby, I drop these. Boniqua mommy, screaming, I poppy. I love it when they call me Big Pop, but I only smoke blunts if they roll prop. But look, I got ya caught up with the drunk flow. Fuck Taekwondo, I told a fofo. For niggas getting mad cause they bitch chose me. A big black motherfucker with G, you see. All I do is separate the game from the truth. Bang boots from the Bronx to Bolivia. Getting physical like Olivia Nuke. Tricks up my click dick all day with no trivia. So give me a hoe, a bankroll, and a bag of weed. I'm guaranteed to fuck until I nosebleed. Even if your new man's a certified Mac, you get that H-Town in you. You want that old thing?
G-I-E, with some new R-U-L-E. Notorious, known for busting in your E-Y-E. Baby, baby, bitches know they love to hate me. How come you come, we come with backs of maybe. How close we came to coming together is crazy. How come you win your sister, similar faces. When y'all coming, y'all be crying like I'm killing y'all bitches. I know there's a bigger picture than the camera roll. Because I don't think y'all be knowing how this shit's unfolding. Back shots to the rear, got the Mac unloading. Gotta reload like every so often. Saying I got my swagger back. Like this, my swagger never left. Don't be so hard pressed to be impressed by these new raps. They act as in the fact is, you want that old thing back. Scarface and Bushwick, Willie D, having nightmares of girls killing me. She mad because what we had didn't last.
I'm glad because a cousin let me hit the ass. Fuck the past, let's dwell on the 500 SL, the E&J and ginger ale. The way my pocket swell to the rim with Benjamins. Another hun's in the crib, please send it in. I fuck non-stop, lick my lips a lot. Used to lick the clits a lot, but licking clits has to stop. Cause y'all don't know how to act when the tongue go down below. Peep the funk flow, here we go. I got the cleanest, meanest penis. You never seen this, stroke of genius. So take off your Tim boots and your body suit. I mean the spandex and hit my man next. Sex get rougher when they come to the nut buster. Pussy crusher, black nasty motherfucker. I don't chase them, I replace them. And if I'm caressing them, I'm undressing them. Fuck what you heard, who's the best in New York? Fulfilling fantasies without that nigga Mr. Raw. Or tattoo, I got you wrapped around my dick. And when I'm done, I got the split. Smalls, listen.